It was towards the end of our fourth session when the counsellor joked that we might try staying together for the sake of the dog. He'd grown weary of us, I suppose, and I can't say I blamed him. You, of course, were able to laugh about it afterwards. You had that latitude, probably because he couldn't make head nor tail of you. Me, I felt he got, and maybe a little too well. When he gave us suggestions, I'm sure he calculated that I would follow through on them. Wasn't I always calculating myself? I felt I knew what he was about. If you knew, you didn't let on, but were still agreeable, riding on instinct as usual. So when he said we were to do things together, break out of the set patterns, try to rediscover each other, we both said we'd try, beginning the very next Sunday. And we did. The trip to a heritage centre was your idea. A leaving, a journey, a destination, a goal. It couldn't be faulted in its logic. Though as for the heritage, I could take it or leave it. With my own memories sickening me, I had little stomach for the broader thing. But I didn't say this. I agreed. So we left the dog unwalked, gazing mournfully out at a grey April day, and set off for County Longford and the Corlee Trackway. People might swim together, but they drown alone. So I had no idea what you saw as we traversed the rolling landscape of South Roscommon. What I saw were semi-derelict dwellings, abandoned farmsteads, workers' cottages, properties bereaved of their elderly owners, mourning weeds on doorstep and gutter. I saw what I could afford to buy for myself, if the worst came to the worst. Calculating. Weren't these buildings exactly what I come from? The white pebble dash stained with growth, the sash windows fossilised in paint, the chill mass concrete walls streeling with condensation when the cabbage was set to boil. And sheds. Out the back were sheds, one for turf, one for the bikes, and one to lock the dog in when she came in heat. Or maybe there would only be the one shed, variously populated. It didn't matter. I might retrace myself from memory onto the familiar fabric one of these derelicts, if I had to. You began to talk, or perhaps it was me, I can't recall. Of nothing at all, needless to say, of the unlikely Sunday afternoon train that balked our progress at Knockcrockery and where it might be headed, of the Clay Pipe Visitor Centre. Clay pipes, Ohm wishes and bog buddies a speciality. What was an Ohm wish? What was a bog buddy? You checked on the internet and found tastefully framed wedding vows inked in runic script and fun figures of couples handcrafted from real Irish bog, compressed briquette style. So we had a laugh at this. Weren't we a couple and bound for the bogs? And just to prove it, we had a moment in Roscommon town after I'd taken a wrong turn. One of the usual incendiary moments. But then we found our road and were able to move on towards Lanesborough, where we crossed the River Shannon and found something safe to talk about again. Like the sudden surprise of the watery expanse of Loch Ree. Like the flatness of the land beneath the broadness of the sky. Like the actual location of our goal, which wasn't at all well signposted. But eventually we got there, and the next phase could begin. Because on entering the building, we separated. We had to in order to deal with the array of panels to be addressed. So while I read for impression, reading the texts randomly and out of sequence, you circled the rotunda clockwise fashion, in step with its beat of history. We would be reunited when the guide opened the doors for us all to see the reassembled section of roadway. Time enough then. The trackway was a road of timbers laid down across the bog, but outsized, not like others of its type, suggestive of a ceremonial progress. From the Catstone in Westmeath to Rathcrogan in Roscommon, perhaps, or otherwise the causeway referenced in the myth The Wooing of Etain, constructed as forfeit by the loser of a legendary chess game over a woman. Either way, Analysis revealed that it was built over the course of one industrious year for some special purpose. Then to sink back into the dank, peaty morass, defeated by its very weight, and so forgotten. Or not to sink, but merely be covered by the millennial growth of the bogs, and still be forgotten. Until it was discovered in 1984, and a section restored to the present and public view. How Maeve brought home the brown bull of Cooley, the guide suggested with a grin. You already loved her. I knew by the way you hung on her words, laughed with her jokes. She was drunk on her history, and you were only too willing to toast. I, on the other hand, just interrogated the faces of our fellow patrons, and wondered. The three old guys, their adventure bikes drawn up together in the car park. The mother and daughter, an empty space where the dad ought to be stood. The foreign couple, young, European and serious. Why, was what I wondered. But then we were bidden into the holy space, and there were the actual timbers to look at. While the guide talked on, I wandered on down the length of the place and tried to decipher the uncouth wooden runes, hoping that I might find something profound written in them. But all I came up with was that it must have been a hard day's work laying the buggers down. And if they skimped here and there, which they certainly had, then it was hardly surprising. At least this was my interpretation. And happy with it, I left you still chatting with the guide and returned to the main area. But once there, I felt adrift. Time hung and I began to sink in the waiting. I'd earlier imagined I might find myself written in the rusty scrollwork of a thrown-down wrought iron gate, or my name picked out in the putty of a broken sash window. But maybe there would be nothing there. Like the trackway, nothing to read but the mundane toil of somebody else's yesterday, even though that somebody else be me. It was a calculation, but accurate, I guessed. And certainly appropriate to a grey Sunday afternoon at the end of a marriage. I didn't notice the parents enter, but I noticed him. He was 13 or 14 and began at once to move randomly and erratically about the place without purpose. Blank of expression, he paid no mind to the panels, but rather seemed to be feeling the very space out in some deeply unknowable way. He made me uneasy, in that familiar way of a spider's encroach across a pillow. He was unchartable, alien, and utterly incalculable. He had autism, and I was the one with the problem. Except, of course, it was his parents who had the real problem. Especially when he became agitated. Something about the place, its lack of corners, perhaps, or maybe the halo of roof lights through which the daylight so dizzily poured. But something here disturbed him. He began to vocalise, then he became physical, first throwing himself at a pillar, then repeatedly bashing his head against it with deliberate and shocking intent. While his father attempted physical restraint, the mother went to the desk, where an urgent, hurried negotiation took place. She left. And when she returned some minutes later, her entry was upstaged by a golden lab who bound tail waggingly into the rotunda. The dog made directly to the boy and gently set himself down across his feet, reaching a supplicatory paw up to his shin. The calming began then, slow at first, but then more rapidly. In whatever language they shared, it was a negotiation. And the dog's good sense prevailed. It was moving to see, and rather humbling. You reappeared, asked what the commotion was. I said I'd tell you in the car. We left the Heritage Centre and time reasserted itself. When I began by saying how I'd immediately recognised the boy as odd, you shot me down with the withering correction that he wasn't odd, just different. It was manifest just then. How small was the box you had fitted me into? A coffin would have allowed me no less room. I was dead to you, as you, no doubt, had become dead to me. Each of us interred in the other's imagination, deep buried beneath a morass of hurt and misunderstanding that had grown with the years, where to struggle was only to be driven further down, dwindling in thought and memory, until we sank out of sight, quite lost to each other and ourselves, suffocating all the while. We so badly needed to be dug out. We needed to be dug out and restored to the light, just as the trackway had been. Because once there'd been a road we'd laid down and walked together. Once there'd been a journey undertaken. And if its origins were now become mysterious, and the destination uncertain, it didn't matter. If our road was recovered, then the journey could be reimagined, recommenced. And our journeys always had their own peculiar logic, as you had already divined. But I had no mind to pay to any of this. All I had were words and a story I had to tell. About the boy, the banging the head against the wall, the dog, and the calming, and the humility. The humility was the most important. And yes, you knew about service dogs. You'd heard a documentary about them on the radio, how they were especially effective in the care and development of autistic children, how they became an interlocutor, could help them mitigate the social space. Right up your street, of course, instinctual person that you are. So there was hope, and I wanted to get it right. I wanted to get it across to you how I felt, in some way you might understand, in such a way that even the simplest words might have an incalculable meaning. But how to do it? For a moment I was lost. Then I recalled another fleeting thought I'd had while gazing down on the timbers of the trackway, one that allowed me a moment's identification with its builders. For all that it had been hard work, they'd probably had a laugh doing it. So what I said to you was, maybe the councillor wasn't quite so far off the mark. About the dog.